All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. As promised, I'm wrapping up the last two segments of this show with Rick Bensignor, president of Bensignor Investment Strategies. Rick writes the institutional newsletter, Supposedly Irrelevant Factors, which is read by some of the most successful hedge funds in the world. And on the retail and individual side, you can follow along with Rick's trades at In the No Trader, and also a piece called 7-11, where Rick picks no more than 7 of the 11 spider ETFs, all with the goal to beat the underlying S&P. Now, Rick, usually we start with U.S. equity markets, but this week I want to start with the breakdown in the U.S. dollar, moving below 100 on the dollar index. It really started at the tail end of last week on the weaker jobs report and was sped up by the inflation data that came in kind of lower than expected. Rick, what's your takeaway from this U.S. dollar breakdown and, in all fairness, a downtrend that's been in place now for about 10 months?
So, Corey, it's interesting that the same time the headlines are telling us that the dollar is on its lowest level in a year, or actually maybe I would guess since April or so of last year, the U.S. stock market is on the highs since April of last year. So the correlation still, or the inverse correlation still exists, even though as early as a few weeks ago, there were many people on the street saying that the correlation has disappeared and that the dollar is not necessarily, a weaker dollar is not necessarily good for stocks right now. That's not panning out. We are getting a structural breakdown in the dollar. So not only is it making new lows, but in some of the models we look at, it is certainly going to challenge dollar bulls' resolve here, because I could still make the case that we can head lower now. Targets that I have include are, interestingly, some are close by. So 99.60 was one such target, and the low this week is 99.58. So we've hit that. The other one is at 98.77. Beneath that, then I don't really have something until about 96.5. The importance here, though, is the fact that this is a helpful piece of the puzzle when looking at the stock market, that, you know, this dollar, this potential shift here in the dollar is important as part of the many markets out there that help influence how stocks move. A weaker dollar at this point is good for stocks. And it's just a matter of, does this end up being like a false breakdown that gold had, let's say in the fall last year, where it spent 6 weeks looking like it had broken under, what was that level, 16, I think it was 1675, only to turn around and then ultimately challenge all-time highs this year. So it's early in this conversation, and it's certainly the talk this week that the dollar set a new low for the year, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the dollar is about to tank. I've been leaning bearish the dollar structurally, and now we have more confirmation that it is structurally changing from what had been a bullish market to a structural bear. But we got out of dollar longs at, I think it was 113 last year, and didn't come back in until I think it was 100.5. And we kicked it out at 104 and change on the highs this year. So it's been a good year in kind of trading the dollar. You've got interest rates now backing up after a crossing of the U.S. 10-year, crossed over 4%, you know, a week ago, and now this week it has slid appreciably. And really, as far as I'm concerned, I've told clients that the key number is 3.82%, and we're actually trading right now at 3.81.5%. I mean, we're right there as far as whether or not rates have really peaked, and, you know, we got the move above 4 and that's it. So I'm going to kind of see how next week goes, but if yields stay under 3.82, then I'm going to play for yields to continue backing down, and that the high that we saw at, 4.08 or something like that, that we just did a week ago, is going to be the high of the move, at least for now.
Rick, any insights into what's causing this weakness in the dollar? Because everyone's throwing out Fed expectations, potentially stronger other countries. I'm not seeing a whole lot of that. The economic data has obviously pushed the dollar around. Interest rates, as you just mentioned, spiked higher and now have pulled back. What are the reasons? What are the cause for the dollar going lower?
I think when it all comes down to it, it's the perception, which the street's been doing for quite some time and really fighting the Fed, because the Fed keeps telling us higher for longer, and the street doesn't want to believe it. And obviously stocks have rallied and yields have not appreciably moved up, and we have not even begun to challenge last year's high at 4.33%. So I think it's the street's belief that the Fed is not going to need to go higher much longer. And with the comfort that the Fed must be getting close to the end of their whole tightening cycle, is the perception that rates will have to come down. And the market is a discount mechanism, so it's always thinking ahead. And you're seeing dollar weakness really in anticipation of rates no longer moving higher. Now, it doesn't mean rates have to collapse, and it doesn't mean we'll necessarily take out the 3.25% on the 10-year. That was the low of the move within recent times. But there does seem to be a sense, and this is more far-reaching than simply in the fixed income market, but we're obviously seeing with the stocks moving the way they have, that the investing public believes that things are far better than the Fed thinks. And they're already anticipating and discounting that the Fed will not continue along this path much longer. And you're seeing, stocks move up, and you are getting a little more broadness to the stock market. We can talk about that as we get into stocks. But I think in general, the dollar move here is simply the perception, and not so much that, let me address the other point that you said, that there are other places better in the world. I'm not really seeing it, other than I'd say Japan, where the Nikkei has made a secular turn for the better. And it has been my favorite non-US exposure market all year. I'm not seeing, let's go towards Europe. I'm not seeing that Europe is in particularly a better place than the US is. And therefore, this dollar weakness to me is more tied to the perception that rates are not going to go materially higher than more than anything else. And again, it's too early in this discussion of, quote, the breakdown to really know if that is going to persist or not.
Can we also carry that over to potential rate cuts? Because the market, as much as they were pricing in rate cuts a few months ago and then not pricing in any rate cuts this year, they did start leaning just a little bit towards a rate cut before the end of the year.
I don't think, my personal view is that the Fed is not going to cut rates in this calendar year. So I do not think that that is going to happen. I don't think the situation warrants it. And frankly, that foremost is, I just don't think the situation warrants it. Secondly, I don't think the Fed is anything close to really thinking about cutting rates. You're not going to drive a car forward and go into reverse without likely having to pass through neutral along the way. And I just don't see the Fed going from raising rates aggressively like they have into then saying, oops, okay, now we're done. And not only are we going to pause, but let's now cut them. I don't think so. So I don't see that happening this year. Could it happen next year? Yes. Calendar year 2023, in my opinion, no.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page on that one. Plus the Fed, like they've been telling us that, yeah, they might start cutting rates next year, but they've been pretty consistent on that. Let's talk about the U.S. equity markets, because look, that inverse correlation, it lines up so interestingly with the dollar. The dollar at levels not seen since April of last year. The markets also at levels that we haven't seen since April of last year, although at that time they were heading drastically lower. The markets are still continuing this uptrend. How much strength is left in these markets, also considering the better breadth that we have seen?
So I want to answer that by telling you that I've made it very clear to my clients that right now, I am actually selling out of SPDRs. So for those that don't know, that's the ETF that tracks the S&P 500, the SPY, which last year I bought when the S&P was about 3,700. I am actually, in the last 24 hours, have sold them out. So I actually think I'm willing to take the chance that right here and right now, not only will the market not progress, but that I actually think I'll have a better than even chance of being able to replace what I'm selling in the last 48 hours at lower prices. So I think for right now, the rally we've seen is likely at its peak. And I could be wrong, and if I am, I have no issue in putting my SPDRs back on. I did it in my retirement account, so there's no tax issue, and there's no 31-day wash rule issue here. So I'm simply playing that up here for a variety of reasons. We're likely close, we're right at a peak that is not obvious to the bulk of the street, and that I will be able to buy these back lower.
Rick, how much does that play into the fact that these markets have just been on such a huge run the last 5 months in a row? The markets, taking into account this month also, but then you also go back 10 months, markets are up 8 of those 10 months. So it has been quite the run higher.
Yeah, no, it's been a huge rally. Obviously, a lot of people didn't partake in it. You know, structurally, the S&P turned bullish into pure bullish above 41 when we saw Friday closes above 41.55. That's a level that we had targeted from before the beginning of the year. We said 41.55 was going to be the key level, and we certainly played with it for multiple weeks. And then we broke out about, I don't know, probably 9-10 weeks ago, give or take something like that. And, you know, we've had a rip higher. I'm at the point here where I think, the bullish consensus. So the street generally uses the AAII poll to determine sentiment. And it's really based on individual investors. It's the American Association of Individual Investors, and they poll. And this is kind of the most predominant poll on the street. I'm not going to actually share with you and your listeners what poll I use, but I can tell you that it's showing that the S&P currently, and this is more a shorter term tactical type poll, but it's showing, I know it was 84% bulls just a day or two ago. And let me see if I can see what it was as of yesterday. And it is showing 88% bulls coming into today. So we peaked this year at 91% bulls. Wouldn't surprise me. So we're now essentially testing into that level. And it wouldn't surprise me if we necessarily even make a higher high. But it's possible that we don't make a higher high in the sentiment poll, and that we see a lower high here. And that is kind of a different way than most would look at saying a potential bearish divergence, because prices made a higher high. And yet it's very possible that the sentiment poll does not. I'm very content taking profits from, you know, we'll just call them from SPDRs that I bought last September, October at 3,700 and kicking them out here. And again, I'm willing to be wrong. I could be wrong here, but I'm up between 20 and 25% on them. It's about 800 S&P points over paying, what did I say, 3,700. So it's a healthy gain, and I just don't think your now is where you want to be putting on new long exposure, especially, Corey, in names that have been high flyers. So I don't mind buying names that are first breaking out from bases now. That's fine. But am I going to buy NVIDIA now or Meta now? No. Fortunately, I actually personally went long Meta last year on the day that made the low for the year. I'm still long at $88.62. So it's been my best trade of the year for sure, but I am not adding to it up here. If anything, I'm close to, I've taken most of it off, but I still have some left, and I'm tempted to potentially kick out of it too. and it's probably you're not going to find most people saying what I've just said to you in the last 2 or 3 minutes, but that's how I'm playing things. Right here, right now, I'm actually taking profits.
So, Rick, would you go as far as saying that the highs are in for the year after this, again, long, prolonged run?
I can't say, and the way the market's acting, it doesn't feel like that. I can tell you that the best place to be a buyer if we get a pullback in the S&P is from, let's say, starting just about 4250 down to, let's call it 4050. Don't know if that opportunity is going to come, but if sometime over the summer you get a chance to buy into that 200-point range, that is the place to be a buyer based upon the work I do. And again, this is what I've told my clients is, you know, if that opportunity comes, leave powder dry for that in case that chance comes.
So where's this money going to rotate into then, Rick? If markets are weak, if the US dollar continues to be weak, where does the money go?
Well, the money doesn't have to go anywhere. It's just, I mean, it's sector rotation. It doesn't have to leave the equity markets and go somewhere else. And if it did, it may find itself towards the bond market. But to me, the game, and you mentioned at the top of our segment when you were introducing me, you know, I have this product called the 7-Eleven Report, which is a subscription-based report through my inthenotrader.com website. And the goal is to outperform the S&P by being no more than 7 of the 11 sectors. And what I do is each month, I change my weightings and or reallocate. And it's not too often that I change sectors, but actually July 1st, I had several changes, probably more than I've had in a year as far as sectors. So it's really about the game of being in the right sectors at the right time. It wouldn't surprise me, especially if interest rates do come down, that tech continues to do well. As high as it is, lower rates will help that sector. So you still want to be buying pullbacks in that, and it's just a matter of, you know, picking the right places to either what you buy XLK, the ETF that tracks the S&P Technology Index, or your long Qs, you know, QQQ, which is the NASDAQ 100 and very heavily tech-weighted type of index. I do think that there's evidence here to show that tech will continue in general to outperform. Doesn't mean it can't go through, have a bad quarter or, you know, some profit-taking. But I think you generally want to be in the tech space, and that this AI revolution at which we're being told we're at the forefront of, you know, will be something to power tech over time and continue to be something that you want to not only have in your portfolio, but be overweight. What hasn't worked this year is something like healthcare, which was, I think, the second best sector last year, is now the second worst one behind energy, which was last year's best sector. So you've seen a massive shift in what's happened this year. And the funny thing is, there's nothing bad in the world of healthcare that would have caused it to be such an underperformer this year. It simply became a source of funds for people to move money into the tech space. So I think the fundamentals on healthcare over the medium and long term are as good as they were 6 months ago and on January 1st this year. It's simply that sector was the one chosen to really get dumped on in order to help fuel the tech drive. And energy, we played this really well. I went overweight energy in August of 2021 and have lightened up on it in February, March, April, and May this year, got down to the lowest. We still had it in the 7-Eleven fund, but we got down to benchmark weighting. And then on July 1st, kicked up weighting again, because I actually think that energy is in a good position to outperform again after the 6 months of real bad underperformance. So the whole thing about, you know, what's going to power the market, or if the stocks come off, where's the money going to go? It could stay in the stock market, or it's simply about sector rotation. And if tech continues to outperform over time, then the pullback in the S&P is, I won't say minimal, but it's not going to be significant unless you see tech really come off. And what they're calling now the Magnificent Seven, those seven names leading the market higher, are spread out now. They all used to be tech names, but now they're in communication services and consumer discretionary. So Tesla is consumer discretionary. Amazon is consumer discretionary. Google and Meta are communication services. And then Apple and Microsoft and NVIDIA are in the tech space. So you do see them now kind of spread out across some of the sectors. So I think in general, those sectors will still do decently. And it's the defensive stuff that right now, or at least for this year, have not done well. And it's a matter of if we get a pullback, like I think we might, how much of the pullback do we get? Do they really skim off of the profits already made in XLY, XLC, and XLK, you know, tech, consumer discretionary, and communication services? You know, how much pullback can we get? We certainly can get a pullback that's more than people expect, but I would tell your listeners that you'd want to be buying the pullbacks at the right times and places. So if you take a stock like NVIDIA and seen, you know, the run that it has had this year, if it pulls back $10, I'm not saying that's enough, you know, in order to bid on it. It's a $450 stock. If it got to 380 or 400, I might consider it. You know, 10 bucks now is not going to be anything. But I do think we are very close to the peak in some of these names.
Okay. Rotation, right? Money does rotate within these markets. You mentioned energy. You like energy. What about some of the other commodities then? Because, look, everything did well. Gold did well. Silver did actually exceptionally well this week. Copper even made a run up towards $4. How do you feel about, let's say, the precious metals first?
Well, it's hard not to like the metals when the dollar is falling. But the metals had not done well as of recent. But I turned, so again, one of my other products that we just started at the end of June is called the Daily Tip Sheet. And this is a daily report. And I try to, besides giving subscribers, you know, all the key things they need to know each and every day to go into trading the markets, I'll put out a few recommendations a week. And on Monday this week, my recommendation was to buy GDXJ, which is the junior gold miners. And we've had a terrific week. We already sold half out of it because we quickly made a bunch of money on it. And I do like the metals, but if we look at something like gold, I can't tell you that gold has bottomed to make its, you know, another run at all-time highs. Right now, I'd say that the two key levels to look at in gold is kind of right where it is now, 1965, and then 2019. This is for like COMEX gold, front month active futures. That's going to be the two places to look at before we'd have a test. So I don't know if gold is going to have enough in it right now to be able to get above 2020 again or so. So I would take on anything I've just bought, I take some profits now and some if we got to 2020. I'd have to see like a proper breakout above 2025 or so on Friday closes for me to think that gold is again going to go test those highs and possibly make new ones. Otherwise, you've got a multi-year, you know, a three-year trading range in gold. Its all-time high was in the futures was in 2020. We got within $4 of it this year. Clearly, there's a bottom somewhere between, let's just say, 1650 and 1600. So it still could be just massive range trading.
Final comments, copper. We don't usually talk about copper, but any thoughts on copper? And again, running closer to that $4 level.
Yeah, I'm more apt to be bullish copper. I think as long as the May low, which was down on, again, COMEX copper, about $3.67, as long as that holds, right now it's about 392. So as long as that May low holds, I think copper's okay. And at this point, if you could get, I'll say consecutive Friday closes above 408, then you're probably going to shoot up to 460. So I'm minimally bullish right now. I kind of like the way it's trading. And if I'll buy a breakout above 408 if we see it.
Okay. Rick, great chatting with you as always. Thank you so much for sharing your insights on the markets and yeah, that dollar breakdown, which I think caught everyone's attention this week, and it helped out practically every other market. But as you're saying, though, some of these markets could be getting a little overheated, and It's very telling that you sold out of your SPY positions. Hey, Rick, thank you as always for your time. I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Everybody, thanks for tuning in to this weekend show. Please keep in touch through email. My email is fleck@kereport.com. I love hearing what each and every one of you think of these markets, our guests, and the companies we interviewed throughout the week. Please go back on our website and podcast to check out all those daily editorials. Rick, everybody, hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.